The following episode of Canada Land may contain subject matter and language that some people will find offensive.
I had a conversation with a client when we were putting together an application back in January. You know, I asked if I could call his brother in Gaza, and he said, no, you can't call right now because he doesn't have good service in the house. He only has service on the roof. But if you stand on the roof, you become a target. And so there's only certain times of the day when they know that there's no shooting that he can stand on the roof. And this is not that time right now. So there are people who went through that to apply for this program, and they're still waiting.
I'm Karen Pugliese, Canada Land Editor-in-Chief. Can you imagine climbing up onto the roof of your home in battle-ravaged Gaza, trying to get a cell signal, just desperately hoping to get into the queue to temporarily escape and come to Canada? We set up a program just for that, for Gazans to get temporary visas to Canada to seek safety. Now, we've had programs like this before many times for people in Ukraine, Afghanistan, Syria. So Immigration Minister Mark Miller promised visas for 1,000 Gazans in January and then upped that number to 5,000 in May. It's supposed to help Gazans get to Egypt and from there to Canada. Now, do you know how many Gazans made it to Canada since January? Well, 206. 206 people. But here's the thing. They didn't exactly get out of Gaza through the program. Those 206 people managed to get from Gaza to Egypt through a network of smugglers and bribes. Now, Canada helped them from there, but that's not how it's supposed to work. Canada's supposed to be able to get Gazans out bribe-free and through its official channels. And that's not working. Even Minister Miller said so. Do you know how many people have gotten out of Gaza legally and officially? In April, CBC reported that number. Zero. Yeah, zero. Zero people made it out through the official program. In May, the Globe and Mail confirmed that number again. Now, I'm thinking of that man climbing up on his roof in between bombs dropping, trying to reach a lawyer in Canada, thinking he's getting out through this program. Does he know no one's made it? And why hasn't anyone? What the hell is going on? Cherise Sushran is going to tell us. Wait for it.
That story you heard at the top of the show about the man climbing on his roof to get cell signal. The person telling that story is Adam Sadinsky, and he was referring to the brother of a client. Sadinsky is an immigration and refugee lawyer. He's also the co-chair of the Advocacy Committee of the Canadian Association of Refugee Lawyers. He joined me on a call from his office in Toronto.
I represent a decent number of clients from Gaza. Both who have applied through the special measures that the government announced in December, but also people who are here in Canada and trying to stay in Canada.
He said it was important to know that this immigration pathway isn't a refugee program.
In this case, we're not talking about refugees. The individuals who are applying through this program would receive visitor visas. This is not a permanent program. It's not for permanent protection.
So it's a visitor visa providing temporary residence for up to 3 years with the idea that people would eventually return home. A similar temporary pathway was created for Ukrainians in 2022, resulting in over 200,000 Ukrainians coming to Canada. So why hasn't the Gaza program been as successful? To understand, I asked Sadinsky to take me through the application process as he would to a client.
Well, the first thing that they would need is they need to have a family member in Canada. That's how you qualify for this program.
That family member would swear a declaration that they're going to provide financial support and also help with settlement in Canada.
The next thing that you receive is a special code, a unique code that you use to apply for your visa online.
The code essentially confirms that you have the elements in place to be eligible. It gives you access to the next step, a much longer application, which determines if you're actually eligible for the program.
And then your application goes to IRCC for processing. And that's where they're going to determine whether you actually qualify for this program.
And here's where things get a bit complicated. With a regular visa application, if you get approved, then the next step would be to give biometrics, like fingerprints, at a visa office in your home country. But that can't work here because there isn't one in Gaza. So applicants have to leave to get those biometric checks completed.
Then the way the program is supposed to work is Canada lets you know, hey, it's time for you to leave Gaza. We're very likely going to approve your application, proceed to the border at Rafah with Egypt, and you're going to go into Egypt, probably get on a bus, and we'll put you up in a hotel for a couple of nights so that you can come and do biometrics at the embassy in Cairo. And then Canada does some additional security checks. And as long as everything checks out, then you get your visa in Cairo, and then you can travel to Canada.
And that's what would happen in a regular scenario. But clearly not this one. It is very difficult to leave Gaza. At the time the visa program was implemented earlier this year, the only potential route out of Gaza was at the Rafah border crossing into Egypt. And Egypt had an agreement with Israel in which Israel could approve who could cross that border. So under Israel's Ministry of Defense, there's a department called COGAT, which stands for Coordination of Government Activities in the Territories, which is responsible for overseeing who goes in and out of Rafah. Canada knew people would have to make it over the tightly controlled Rafah crossing. So Canada has sent COGAT lists of people who have been approved for the visa application with the idea that COGAT would review and ideally allow those people to exit. But it hasn't really worked that way.
The number of people who have been successful through that process where Canada tells you, yes, you can leave, we're going to help you cross the border from Gaza into Egypt, I don't know of anyone who was successful through that process.
So it's zero.
It's my understanding. And to date, the Israeli government has not approved a single person to cross from Gaza into Egypt.
And would you say this is the biggest problem that's happening right now with this program?
I would say yes. You know, even if Canada processed all of these applications and Canada gave all of the approvals that they needed, if people aren't able to go over the border and they can't get to Egypt, then they also can't get to Canada.
Sadinsky said that the number of people who have been approved to cross the border is, to his knowledge, zero. Earlier news reports say this as well. So I reached out to Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada. They did not confirm directly that the number was zero, but what they did tell me was that as of August 17th, 450 people have exited Gaza on their own, completed their application, and been approved for the visa. 206 have now completed the final step and made it all the way to Canada. So how exactly have they gotten here?
There has been a fair amount of smuggler activity on the Gaza-Egypt border. And this is in the days before the Israeli capture of Rafah. The people were paying tons and tons of money to smugglers, companies, which would allow them to get over the border, not through the regular process. A couple hundred people who were able to leave Gaza through that route made their way on to Egypt, and some of those people have ended up in Canada now.
Just a couple of months after the program started, Immigration Minister Mark Miller expressed his frustration at the situation.
This is a program that we knew from the get-go could be a failure. Up to now, it is a failure, and it's something I think we need to recognize.
However, in May, Israel seized the Rafah crossing, and according to reports, the border has been effectively closed to people trying to leave, even through smuggling.
The Israeli military says its forces have taken control of the Palestinian side of the Rafah crossing, which borders Egypt and southern Gaza.
In response to growing concerns from advocates like Sadinsky, Minister Mark Miller announced at the end of May an expansion to the Gaza program, increasing the cap to 5,000 and expanding eligibility. But the Rafah crossing is still closed, and thousands of applications are still pending, even new ones being created.
There's a lot of people today sitting in Gaza who've had applications pending for 7 months or you know, have passed through everything that they've needed to do. And frankly, not easily.
What should Canada be doing now? And what happens to those who are waiting? One mother from Gaza says that she doesn't want what happened to her daughter to happen to anyone else.
And I was trying so hard to get her, like, kind of like expedite the process for her, because she was a child, a minor, she was handicapped.
Due to the war, it's difficult to actually get in touch with someone in Gaza applying to this visa program. However, there are people in Canada who say they know what they're going through.
We moved to Canada in 2019, and I was so hopeful that once we step in Canada that we're going to be able to reunite with Jenna. But I was not aware that the immigration process takes years for people to reunite. And for the last 5 years, I've been trying to make that happen.
This is Samar Alikdor. She's standing outside a Liberal campaign office in Montreal, talking to audio producer Tristan Capicchione. There's a protest going on in the background, trying to raise awareness of the violence in Gaza. This isn't the first protest Alikdor has been to, or even the 20th. That's because since March, Alikdor has been out on the streets almost every day. It started as a one-woman sit-in outside Minister Mark Miller's office, which went on for months. And then recently, she started to join larger protests at various political or governmental offices around Montreal. Alikdor is on a mission to compel the minister to expedite the Gaza immigration applications so that no one ends up like her daughter, Jana.
I was so hopeful that once we step in Canada that we're going to be able to reunite with Jenna.
Alikdor came to Canada in 2019 after completing her studies in the U.S. She was able to bring over her husband and two other children, but she says that her daughter, Jenna, was not able to leave. That's because Jenna was born with cerebral palsy, a developmental disability, as well as brain damage, and she required extensive care. Alikdor says getting her out of Gaza safely required special transportation. So in the meantime, relatives in Gaza were taking care of her. But immigration had delayed her application for a very long time. And when the war broke out, Alikdor became desperate.
And I was trying so hard to get her, like, kind of like expedite the process for her, because she was a child, a minor, she was handicapped. But still, the response was like, we have to respect the process and delays and all of that.
Alikdor says that when Gaza City was under siege in January, Jenna and her relatives sheltered in a church. As has been reported, access to medicine and food were difficult during the siege. Then, she says, the unthinkable happened.
And since my daughter, she had a cerebral palsy problem, so she had to have soft food, certain type of food that she could consume. And what happened is that she starved to death, and she had no access to her medication that she needed at the time.
Just a few days after her daughter passed, Alikdor says she finally heard back from immigration officials, letting her know her daughter would be able to come to Canada. But of course, it was too late. Alikdor wants to make sure no one in Gaza has to experience what her daughter experienced, waiting for word from immigration for months and months. And that's why she spent months trying to get the ministry to move these new temporary visa applications forward. Because in addition to the issues leaving Gaza, people have been waiting to know if they're eligible for the Canadian visa, including some people who applied when the program opened in January 2024. In fact, some Canadian lawyers have submitted a group litigation case to the federal court asking for the Ministry of Immigration to address applications that have been held up for months. The lawyers represent approximately 40 people in Gaza who have all submitted applications and not received codes or updates of their status. Maureen Silkoff is a refugee lawyer based in Toronto. However, she is not associated with the group I mentioned above. Silkoff says that while people in Gaza cannot leave due to the Rafah border being closed, the program may be giving Gazans the impression that Canada could help them leave, She says that while the application warns that people are not guaranteed to leave, it does not in fact make it clear that absolutely no one has been let through this process.
It seems that people were told when they applied that there was a bit of a disclaimer that third parties had to vet, so exit could not be guaranteed. But that's somewhat different from transparency as to whether there was any kind of agreement already in place. The program opened in January. It's, been some time since the program opened. What's the update? Are there assurances that are in place now? What's happened in terms of the Rafah crossing being closed? What communication do people have? You know, what efforts have the government made?
We're both looking at the IRCC website as I talk to her on the phone.
I think there should be two notifications. We depend on COGAT vetting, and there hasn't been any vetting yet, and the crossing is closed. And so I think there are two very practical blockages to people exiting, and those should be clear.
I don't see any of those notifications that she mentioned. Tsulkov said that it's about fairness to people in a time of crisis. Because while Canada does not have an obligation to bring Gazans over, they are electing to offer this special program and thus engaging in the lives and hopes of people in a crisis.
Because it ends up being, basically an access to justice issue, I think, right? If, you have a program in place for vulnerable people, it's a humanitarian program, it's in keeping with Canada's humanitarian obligations. But again, it's a question of whether this is procedurally fair, whether there's people's expectations are being managed, and what the information is that's going out to people as the situation unfolds.
Tsulkov worked on cases of people from Afghanistan, and she said that Canada has been in this situation before. There was a program to bring people who had worked with the Canadian government over to Canada before the Taliban took over in 2021. But after the Taliban took over, those people, who were more at risk of harm by the Taliban, were essentially left behind.
And the Canadian policies for Afghanistan specified that because of the work of the interpreters, because of the work of people with the embassy, with Canada, they were at risk of not just harm, but even assassination by the Taliban and other groups. So Canada essentially put people at that risk. So Canada needed to do better in that situation. There are still people whose applications fell into a black hole, who never heard anything, who have pending applications, whose processing was delayed. And we don't want that situation replicated for the people of Gaza who have applied under the program.
And Canada should have learned from that, says Tsulkov.
I think the situation is foreseeable. And I think it makes it all the more urgent to have transparency in terms of the program.
Where do we go from here? A spokesperson for the IRCC, Jeffrey McDonald, said in a statement that Canada has continued to put forward names of people who passed preliminary eligibility to the local authorities. But he said challenges leaving Gaza are out of Canada's control, and that Canada will continue to work with local authorities to facilitate these exits.
I mean, looking at this program overall and the problems we've talked about and the almost impossibility of leaving Gaza at this point, has Canada given Gazans false hope through this?
To a certain extent, yes. Because the government was enthusiastic about this program. Lots, thousands of people applied. But there's another level. And that level is approvals from COGAT. And if people don't get that, then they can't leave. So in terms of creating a program, promoting a program, encouraging people to apply for a program that relies on an approval from a third-party government, that you don't have any assurances of whether that third-party government is going to review and approve the applications that you need to be approved and reviewed, I don't think that the government should shut the program down. But I also, I'm not sure that if someone were to apply today, the hope of being accepted anytime soon, or if at all, is not particularly high.
That's your Candleland. You can email me at Karen with a Y at Candleland.com. Our website is Candleland.com. Today's show was reported by Cherise Sushrin. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Caleb Thompson. Additional field recording by Tristan Capicchioni. Max Collins is our production manager. I'm Karen Pugliese, Candleland's editor-in-chief. Theme music is by So Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Teacher and TikToker Frank Dominic.
How's it going?
It's real good. It's good to have you here. Listen, today on the show, the selling of Kamala Harris and Canada. Yeah. Pierre Poilievre pulls a patriotic vision of our great nation out of his and then hastily shoves it right back up there.
He really did try with the Jets. It's really what he was going for.
Welcome to Shortcuts, where we talk about the news.
Good evening and thanks for joining us. We begin in the U.S., where a newly energized Democratic Party is poised to officially nominate Kamala Harris.
Well, lots of eyes in Canada on what is happening right now in Chicago.
People, we are moving forward with optimism.
Frank, as I said, this is where we talk about the news in Canada. But this week, all of the news in Canada is shit about America.
There's just too much stuff going on with the U.S. election, like especially whenever it's a Trump election. It's like we have to stay focused because this affects all of us.
It is engrossing and things keep happening and it's super dramatic. The Canadian media is all in, and not just in coverage, but in the story that they're telling. Let me review some of these headlines here. Globe and Mail, welcome to Kamala Land. In her home base of L.A., excitement for the Harris campaign is infectious. Another Globe and Mail. Republicans can't land a punch on Kamala Harris. Another Globe and Mail. The Democrats are going into their convention gleeful and united.
Gleeful and united.
Toronto Star. Will women embrace Kamala Harris? Experts say that she's injecting a shot of adrenaline. CBC, a bit more muted, but the bent is the same. The Harris Show. Democratic convention is a primetime debut for surprise nominee. Also CBC, a Harris presidency would have a soft spot for Canada, says our ambassador. Even in the National Post, John Iveson, can the foundering federal liberals pull a Kamala out of their hat, always finding the Canadian connection? There is just a complete love affair with this narrative that there is this surge of excitement.
Yeah, big energy. Like it's, you know what, it's funny because there's a lot of people who are like flashbacking to Hillary, right? And I don't think that's the case, but I bet what we're going to start seeing is a lot of articles coming out, and it's going to be either comparing Kamala and post-DNC to either Hillary or to Trudeau after 2015, right? Like sunny ways, 2015, everything's fantastic. And then like the 2021 election, it was like, whatever, I guess we have to do this.
I've gotten so jaded and questioning of any moment when there is such a market demand for a certain story. It was looking so grim. With like, I can't believe Trump is back.
Again.
I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe everything they've thrown at him and the court cases and the felony conviction. And then somebody tried to shoot him. And then Biden, oh my God, what a train wreck. We are heading for disaster. And there's such an emotional need for somebody to come and save us. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, here it is. And it's big Obama vibes of hopey, changey. And like, it's hitting a spot for me too of like, I needed to feel like, wow, I'm glad that these fine people exist and are in positions of leadership. And I think that that is such an attractive narrative for people that I'm suspicious of it. And yes, the fact that we were told again and again and again that Hillary was a lock and everybody had that wrong has absolutely collapsed my faith. I guess my question is, it's the media's job to just give us information and tell us what's happening. Are we being told a story or sold a story?
So the Daily Show actually did something really interesting yesterday. I'll start there. They were talking about, and it was a joke piece, but they were going around the DNC talking about the vibes.
Every convention has a theme, and this year's Democratic Convention is all about the vibes.
What's the vibes here at the convention?
Upbeat.
Sparkling.
Yeah. Positive.
I'm all about the motivating vibes.
Let's get it done.
Are you feeling electric?
I do feel electric.
Don't shock me. Don't if I touch you. Woo! That's a little electric there. Woo!
I think the difference between media and social media and what we're seeing with regular people is the vibe check. Is the vibe check there? So when we talk about Hillary, everyone thought, yeah, Hillary's a lock. I also thought she was a lock, but I didn't like her. I didn't care anything at all about American politics because it just felt bland and boring. The second she said, Pokemon, go to the polls, I was like, done. I was out. I'm like, this is, I don't want to talk about it.
Well, you're being spoken to like you're an idiot child. Like, it's just.
Well, and she's so out of touch, right? Like,
it's cringy and bad.
But not cringy in the good way, because there is like good cringy. There's like good millennial cringe out there. And she did not embody any of it. Whereas Kamala Harris, I think, is doing a much better job of tapping into like the good side of cringe. Like, when people try to make fun of her laughing, when people try to make fun of her having a good time, why are you trying to put somebody down for like smiling? Like, Trump is always miserable and Biden was only smiling when he was eating ice cream. Now you have somebody who's happy to actually be campaigning.
She looks great, but we're talking about vibes.
All vibes.
And Canada is swallowing it. Like, listen to this. This is an editorial board op-ed from the Globe and Mail. This is the official position of the paper of record. And the title is The Return of, Dare We Say It, Optimism to Politics. The Democrats' optimism begins with Mr. Biden's decision to step aside and endorse his Vice President Kamala Harris. Mr. Biden put his party and his country before his own interests, and he did it on the biggest political stage in the world. It was a moment that represented politics at its potential best. And of course, they connect this to Canada. Should this optimism continue and translate into her victory in November, it would challenge the notion that voters are best guided to the ballot box by outrage and anger. And they directly connect this to like what's going to happen here. Okay, so that's one story, that Biden is this American hero who stepped aside and did this patriotic thing.
And allowed for a new generation, blah, 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 because he said he was going to be the transitional candidate. And now it's happening and people are excited.
There's another story, which is that he was forced out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, there is definitely, you can, once you start putting the pieces together, it definitely seems like that happened. And I think it was for the best interest, not just of the Democratic Party, but for America as a whole and for, like, democracy.
Here's an alternate take that I actually appreciate, and it's also in the Globe and Mail from Konrad Jakubowski. I think that it's usually more useful to have a contrary take, especially if it's not just for the sake of being contrary, but, like, just to say the same thing everybody else is saying, and everybody is saying the same thing, it seems, in Canadian media. Not Konrad Jakubowski. Here's what he wrote. Can Kamala Harris sustain the momentum until November? The vice president had faced the worst media coverage of any second in command since Dan Quayle. Not even Dick Cheney got less respect from the press than her. From her bid for the 2020 Democratic nomination, which flopped spectacularly, to her rocky vice presidential tenure, Ms. Harris systematically raised doubts about her political skills, judgment, and authenticity. Nobody wants to hear this now, but this is what the story was up until a couple months ago.
I mean, and so that's the thing. So her first interview, that was like the one that everyone like references as being like this catastrophic interview. And I think it was from that moment in time that Biden decided, yeah, we're going to keep her on the side. We're not going to really profile her as much. And while that might have been a hamper to her in many people's eyes, like, oh, well, she's not liked because she hasn't been around because people haven't gotten used to her, she was able to relaunch her campaign. And it doesn't matter if you're left or right, people are willing to see that relaunch.
You're still just talking about feelings and vibes. And this is what Conrad kind of ends with in his piece. To win in November, Ms. Harris will need to do more than coast on her newfound image as the fun candidate with a fun former football coach as her running mate. Most Americans are not really in the mood for fun these days. They are pessimistic about the economy and the security of their country. I like that he's talking to his readers like grownups, right? There is a different story than whether Kamala Harris has a nice laugh and is a charming person, and she certainly is. And she seems to be able to, like, dodge the punches and Trump can't make a nickname stick. This is all true, and it's filling some sort of an emotional
need.
But
what makes her better? Like, what actually is – is it you're talking about, like, the substantive policy side?
I'm saying that when we look at this from Canada, we are watching the U.S.-American presidential election show.
Yeah.
We are not the constituency who this matters to.
Oh, no, we're not voting. We're watching, and maybe it does affect our lives, but – we don't have any say of how it rolls out.
Yes. So there's a different lens that many Americans might look at this through, which is to say, here we have the Democratic establishment. If there was a fear, and conspiracy people would call it the deep state, but other people just call it the establishment, that we were being mismanaged, misled, and kind of lied to, that everything that Obama promised in Hopi changiness, like, things have not gotten better, and the income disparity
only getting wider, yeah.
The vibe has not been met with actual policy. And you're not really sure what's going on. And then the debate comes and you're like, oh my God, this is a weekend at Bernie's president. Like, they've been lying to us. The lie has been revealed, because in a debate situation, you can't keep that secret anymore. So now the machinery of the establishment moves in. And what do we get? The Clintons, the Obamas.
They're all coming out in full force.
Yeah.